live from America's finest city. This is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700. And now, your hosts, Ryan White and David McKelvin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today, I have Rich Gordon in studio, a Fairway Mediation Center. Not a golf course, right?
Not at all.
A fair as in potentially equitable?
Completely equitable.
Completely equitable. Okay. A Fairway Mediation Center. And coming in just under the wire, the Barefoot attorney here, Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center. His website is barefootlawyer.com. So, got a couple attorneys in the room, right? That's what it comes down to. I mean, you know, in a nutshell, talking to attorneys today. And the reason I bring this up is the business that I'm in, we talk a lot about negotiating. And there's a couple different ways to approach it. And you guys have two different methods to get to the end result, which would be perhaps dissolving a partnership and creating an agreement that happens at the same time. And not that different than what I'm doing in terms of buying and selling real estate. We're obviously trying to come to conclusion with respect to an agreement and, well, I guess dissolving an ownership and creating a new one. So not drastically different, but two different approaches. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, that sounds all right. Two different tools in the same box, perhaps.
Okay, good enough. Two different tools in the same box. That being said, what are, and I'll let you, Rich, I'll let you describe them. What are the two different approaches we're talking about?
In mediation, the couple comes in together, and we present them with their options. And between the two of them, they come up with the best resolution for them as an entity. So we limit those options so that they both can't get everything. They have to share whatever was accumulated.
Okay, good enough. So one would think that somewhere in the middle, maybe. It's kind of the idea, right?
That's correct.
And the middle is an arbitrary point. I know you'll, Ethan, will be very clear to point out that middle is not necessarily in half. What is it that, I mean, your kind of expertise, Ethan, is not necessarily mediation. It is?
Well, we do, we certainly settle cases, but we're on the litigation or presentation end of it. So we only represent one side. That doesn't mean that all cases have to be a fight. In fact, that's how Rich and I met each other, is because what we do overlaps so well. In fact, I will say that a majority of our cases do settle, and if they didn't, considering the volume that we did, we'd keep the courts busy night and day and holidays too. So settlement is absolutely required for most cases, simply because we can't address every possible problem. And mediation is just such a wonderful forum to make sure that that happens.
Now, I would imagine we were kind of talking about this before the show. There's a certain amount of amicability that a couple would have to attempt the mediate and to be successful with the mediation process. Are you finding that to be the case?
Absolutely. They have to have some communication skills and not just hot hatred, which prevents any communication whatsoever. No matter what the cause was for the breakdown, whether it was a toilet seat left up and down, a roast not prepared on time, or a string of girlfriends in the backseat of the car, they have to be able to communicate.
Right. Okay, good enough. And I'm guessing should that communication not be possible, one might opt for or perhaps be forced to move up to a different type of resolution.
Well, if you're hinting at litigation, here's what often happens. A lot of times couples will find that they can resolve 12 of their 15 issues either between themselves or with the assistance of a mediator and reduce their issues to three that they cannot resolve and need to put in the hands of a judge. And so it's not all or nothing. Sometimes, and often is the case, you might have some sort of hybrid.
So commonly, or I should say commonly, but on occasion, people come to you with, as you mentioned, 12 of 15 issues pre-resolved.
By the time they get to me, they might have 5 of 15.
Okay, got it.
And they'll say, oh, we've agreed on this much. We've agreed that the children should live, and we've even agreed as to where they will live most of the time. What we haven't agreed
the children shall live.
Live at all.
We agree the children shall live.
That was kind.
Good. That's good. Okay.
And What we haven't been able to agree on is which town we're going to live in. I just got a job in San Francisco, and my former significant other doesn't want to move with me, so now we're talking about child sharing across long distances. We went over to Family Court Services. They met with us for half an hour, and they couldn't help us resolve it, and they made a recommendation that seemed like it came out of a can and didn't recognize our individual circumstances. We don't have an agreement, and I want to fight, and then this might be a really good candidate where I say, well, you don't really need to fight. You obviously both love your kids. You've resolved the main issues there. Why don't you see if maybe someone who has a lot of experience at developing common ground where there might not have been before, take a look at your case before you decide to spend a lot of money throwing your problem at someone in a black dress who's only going to look at it for 15 minutes and perhaps resolve your issue with a meat cleaver.
Okay. Is that what it comes down to, a meat cleaver at times?
At times, sure. The San Diego courts, at least, I practice in three counties, but the San Diego courts are so impacted now that probably about 40% of the calendar, if not 60%, is devoted to the calendar itself. In other words, we have no time for this today. When can we squeeze you in the future? And they're literally devoting time to that, and it's a significant amount of their time. Once you get to that point, you recognize that your solution, if it comes at all, is going to be substantially down the road. And there's a phrase, justice delayed is justice denied. And sometimes the only justice is what you can get for yourself. Well, there's two ways to do that. One is self-help, that we discourage. And the other is negotiation, and that we encourage.
One of the things we tell people all the time is the judge does not care what color sneakers he had on. They're not going to listen to most of the stuff that is so important to you. Let's try to get to the important issues and deal with those, either in my office or in Ethan's office, because judges don't care. They don't have the time to care.
Yeah, I can see, and we talked about this previously as well, that the culpability or what was wrong, who cheated on who gambled all the money away, who did what is... And you did bring up some cases where it had some bearing, but for the most part, somewhat irrelevant, especially the situation when we're in the no-fault situation we're in. Is that, I mean, and a lot of your time is spent with the counseling.
Exactly.
Right? And listening.
When I have both people in the room, I find myself being a psychologist or pop psychologist much more than being an advocate, as Ethan does, because they're playing off of each other. You did this, you did this, you did this. And he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they need a forum in which to be heard. And I'm the alternative to some psychologist's office. That's really important for some people to feel that they've had their moment to express that, because they're not going to have that in court. So they do it in my office. I can't afford a Tesla yet, but I'm working on
it. Someday.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would think a large portion of that is being able to get it off your chest. Mm-hmm. You know, saying it out in the open is a portion of the ability of moving on past it. And, yeah, I would imagine a lot of your time is spent listening to, I don't know, what I might even describe as irrelevant details of why these people are upset at each other.
You have to realize a divorce is a lot like a death. And I always tell people that they should read the book Elizabeth Kubler-Ross On Death and Dying. Because there are definite phases that people go through. First of all, denial. You walked in on him. You don't believe that you just saw what you saw. And then the next phase is anger. And I normally get them between the denial and the anger phase until you can get to negotiation. You're going to deal with those things because they're not in a space to negotiate. Mm-hmm. But if they read the book and know what's coming, then they'll be more prepared to move on with their lives. And as a rule of thumb, about a year from the time it starts until they're psychologically ready to move on and feel somewhat whole again.
We're talking with Rich Gordon, a Fairway Mediation Center. His website, afairway.com. That's his website, afairway.com. Does anybody read the book that you suggest to them?
Oh, frequently. And,
yeah?
And sometimes it's dog-eared, which I like.
And they come in with it.
Yeah, that or what color's my parachute, but that's another subject. They do read it because it's nice to know. And I always ask, has anybody close to you ever died? Because you're going to experience the same feelings that you had then, now. And it's not a bad thing to be somewhat prepared.
That's an interesting analogy with death. And that is there's a lot of parallels there, huh?
There certainly are.
Well, yeah, you do put on a little bit of a psychologist hat, don't you?
I do. That's why I look this way.
That's why you look this way. Okay, good enough. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the advantages and disadvantages of our two different options here in the Art of Negotiating. Ahead of us when we come back. Fairway Mediation Center, the website, afairway.com. That's the website, afairway.com, as well as Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center, barefootlawyer.com, barefootlawyer.com. Now, you had an interesting story about the barefoot lawyer that you told last time, and I thought it was pretty good. You want to tell that again, where that came from?
Oh, you mean what the origin is?
Yeah, origin of being a barefoot lawyer and what that means.
Well, ultimately, it means championing justice without espousing its trappings. And it takes as its example the barefoot doctors in China that are essentially people out in the field who have training but don't have the nice offices. Also, the barefoot lawyers out in Goa and in India and in Indonesia. Where they've been taking on major interests, just people with basic training, not making a whole lot of money at it, but getting results. So we are lawyers, in fact, members of our firm are certified specialists. But the main purpose is no frills, get the job done, and we're not going to try to impress you with flash, but we are going to try to let you know what's ahead, and we're going to try to give you the best results.
We look pretty flashy. You got a suit on today. I mean, you know, what more do they want from you? Shoes, too, right? I can attest. He's wearing shoes today.
All right. Now you're leading me towards my standard joke, which is to say that I'm barefoot in my shoes. So it's true. I mean, the fact is we cannot really struggle against first impressions. So even though we may espouse a particular philosophy, which is embodied in Barefoot Lawyer, the fact is we dress up for court and we try to make our arguments stick as best we can, and we use every tool of persuasion there is, and one is looking sharp.
Looking sharp. That's Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center. Again, the website, barefootlawyer.com. That's B-A-R-E, footlawyer.com. Okay, as promised, advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, we hit on some of these points previously, right? But and I think a lot of the advantages and disadvantages are relatively obvious to people out there that aren't experts in the field, as you guys are. But I'm sure you'll have additional, again, advantages and disadvantages to each method. Ethan, why don't you go first? Why don't you talk to me about, and not a litigation part of it, because as you mentioned, settlement is commonly an outcome, but a solution method other than mediation.
Okay. There are several approaches that have similar aims, which is to ultimately reach an agreement and avoid court. The last time I was on, and it was some months ago, I actually came down fairly hard on those models, especially collaborative divorce. And the basis of my coming down hard on it was that a lot of it is practiced in a way that doesn't yield equal or fair agreements. So the problem is not the aim. The problem is not even necessarily the method. The problem is the circumstances. So the last time we were here, we were talking about special needs children and people haggling and horse trading regarding custody and visitation of special needs children without expert advice, which is ridiculous. So in that circumstance, it's not necessarily the model itself that needs to be changed, but rather to get people informed. Similarly, where a settlement model can suffer is when you have a power imbalance. If I have someone come in who's a domestic violence victim, I almost will never send them straight into mediation or collaborative until the power balance is restored. That may mean going to court, getting some restraining orders, establishing custody, establishing basic support orders. Once that's done, even though we started off in a litigation mode, once the parties are in a better and more equal footing, they may indeed be excellent candidates for mediation. Especially in domestic violence cases, the abuser will often suddenly respect the other party, become apologetic, promised to change, and there's no better time to take advantage of that conciliatory mood than to send them off to someone like Rich.
I have to be a neutral third party throughout the process. However, if one party comes in and bellows louder, I have to step it up a little up for the one who is less demonstrative, so that not that I am being their advocate, but I am the voice of reason that has to be heard. And more than once, I have had a gentleman who comes in with this dictation list. By that, I mean he's dictating the terms. And I say, you know, that's not the way it's going to work here. You know, she has a right to all this, and he may bellow otherwise. If I can get him to stay in the room and realize the facts of life, yay. Otherwise, someone is called very quickly, Ethan, these people need your help, or she needs your help. But by being the neutral in the room, it balances the teeter-totter so that they each are equally heard. And that's another thing we do. We hear what the spouse no longer hears. You know, you're talking to somebody, but they're not hearing or listening to you. Our job is to really hear what's being said, because then you can get to an agreement much more quickly.
We're talking with Rich Gordon. His website, afairway.com. That's his website, afairway.com. Now, what do you mean the spouse doesn't hear it anymore?
Well, I don't know how long you've been married, and it's none of my business, but...
I know what you mean, but
okay.
I'm giving you a chance to explain yourself.
You go through the pro forma of how was your day, dear? And, you know, you're mumbling chicken guts in your ear, watching sports in the background. You're not really hearing. So when someone says something, it's filtered. You have your natural filters. All the things you listened to before you got married are suddenly you're not listening to anymore. So I have to hear the words that are being said, and I will interpret them. I may change Yiddish to English or English to Yiddish and explain what is actually being said. And I will say, did you hear that? And they go, gee, I never really heard that before.
Give me an example of an interpretation. I mean, obviously, we get the language translation, right? I mean, I think we can all wrap our minds around that. But, you know, I'm going to say, she always puts the toilet seat down, and I can't stand it, right? But I really mean something else? Is that kind of what you're getting at? Is there's an interpretation factor that you're doing here?
There's certainly a part of that. It may be we're going to the Smiths tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and he comes out of the bedroom at 7:30, still in his underwear. He's not quite ready, and she doesn't know how to respond because they're not hearing the time. They're not hearing the necessity to be punctual, having really nothing to do with the substance of the marriage, but having to do with the substance of marriage. You're not listening to each other anymore. So we hear that 7 o'clock is important and explain to the other side why 7 o'clock is important. That may open the lines of dialogue in ways they haven't been anymore. And it may also lead to reconciliation. Because
really?
By the time they get to the adversarial, reconciliation is sort of done. Ain't going to happen. About 20% of the people that come to us say they want to get a divorce. But after hearing them argue as they argue, we say, you know, really, you're not so bad. Why don't you go try this again? Or why don't you go see so-and-so, the psychologist, and see whether you can work on it, so that a divorce is not always inevitable when people say they want a divorce.
We're talking with Rich Gordon, afairway.com. That's the website, afairway.com. Talking about, of course, mediation, but also ways that you're assisting in the process. You're not there to, you know, just listen. You're providing hints and finding a way to bring the two people together.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with your analogy of Smith's at 7, not ready till 7:30, probably doing his hair for an extra half hour. Takes time, I'm sure.
Well, that's Ethan's hair.
Well, yeah,
not mine.
I'm looking at Ethan. I'm looking at him. That's at least a half hour there. Got it. That certainly does make sense. You bring up an interesting point in the fact you mentioned reconciliation. I would imagine that is the most desirable outcome for these people that see you, is to find a way they can leave and not have to dissolve this thing. What percentage of the time is that possible? I mean, I realize it's not up to you, But there have to be some percentage of time where people come in thinking they have problems and, frankly, you're able to solve them.
I would think a good 10% of people never make it to the final gate. They may make it to the starting gate of divorce, but not the final gate. Because in California, there's a six-month span between the initial filing and when a divorce can be effective. So sometimes along the way, they'll take a timeout and they'll date. They may travel. They may rekindle marriagey stuff, and try to make it go again. That's all well and good until one of them steps out with somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But not everybody is sure when they first started. And if reconciliation is considered, yay for them.
Yeah, that's certainly refreshing to hear that 1 in 10 go give another go, mm-hmm. I guess is what you're saying. They try it again. It doesn't end.
No. Actually, with children, it never really ends because you have a constant relationship with that person, good or sometimes bad.
I was going to go there next.
Good or sometimes bad. Yeah, I mean, assuming that it's a good thing, that it's good for everybody that they stay together. Obviously, people raising kids that are miserable towards one another, they're better off being separated, but I'm hopeful that it's, you know, a positive situation for everybody.
No, but Rich is absolutely correct. You know, if we're talking about 10% reconciliation, we're talking about a much greater percentage of parents who may not be married anymore, but nevertheless are cooperating in the raising of their children. And that is probably the most important goal, whether they reconcile or not.
Yeah, well put. We haven't talked about the kids much. They are the innocent bystanders, so to speak, in all of this, aren't they?
I'm going to give you a horrific statistic.
Oh, please do.
50% of first marriages kaput. 75% of second marriages break up primarily because of the children of the first marriage.
Really?
Because the children of the first marriage, when new boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife come into the picture, it becomes a tug of war, either not respecting the new person or if the new person disciplines the child and the child's parent doesn't like the discipline of the new person. So it creates a whole new set of issues that weren't there in the first marriage at all. And kids are not normally cooperative with somebody new coming into their house or their mother's 50%
bed. 50% first. Of first marriages and 75% of second marriages don't work.
Correct.
That is a staggering statistic.
Well, the 50% is not quite as bad as it sounds, and I'll explain why in a second. But before I do that, I'm going to give a special plug with regards to the second marriages, which is I know that Rich does something that I think is really very positive, which is when he is aware of the successor players, who the new significant relationships are, he often will involve them to make sure everyone knows about everyone else and that there's no misunderstandings. And I got to say that insofar as I'm aware of that portion of what he does, I respect that a great deal, because I think that probably does something to counter that horrific statistic.
So the new wife or girlfriend, probably girlfriend, might come into mediation when I'm going through divorce with my current wife? Do I understand that right?
When we get into the, well, yes. as crazy as that sounds.
That is. Okay.
Because the custody arrangement is often going to be between the ex-wife and the new wife. And times of picking up the kids and whether you're going to buy them a Gucci bag or a Target bag, those kinds of things. So those things need to be talked about. And maybe that's more psychology than mediation lawyering.
Sounds like it is, but that's part of it, right?
It really is.
So I'm guessing that's an uncommon practice to bring the girlfriend into your divorce mediation, which, as I'm saying it, it sounds pretty uncommon as I'm saying it.
It's difficult to give statistics because mediation is so confidential. The way mediation is phrased, it's not a right of confidentiality, but rather part of the process. Waiving that confidentiality can create irregularity in the process that can invalidate a court order. So it's tight. So getting real statistics on it, very difficult. Everyone, I don't even know if Rich has an opportunity to compare notes with other mediators because of the level of confidentiality that they have. Obviously, they can talk about cases anonymously. But I don't know whether it's unusual or not, but I am aware of it because there are cases that have either gone from me to Rich or have come out of Rich to me. and that's how I've learned of it.
We're talking with Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center, barefootlawyer.com. That's his website, barefootlawyer.com. We talked about methods other than straight up litigation. You mentioned a couple of the collaborative mediation. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the pros and cons of, well, the litigation process, but one would hope there's a resolution prior to getting in that litigation process ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour. We've been talking with Rich Gordon, a Fairway Mediation Center, afairway.com, afairway.com, as well as Ethan Marcus, President, Marcus Family Law Center, barefootlawyer.com. That's his website, barefootlawyer.com. We talked about some of the pros and cons of the mediation, I guess, process is what we're going to call it. Let's talk about some of the pros and cons of the litigation process, kind of the, I'm going to say traditional, what people would consider to be the, well, the way our parents got divorced way back when. That's been around forever. Is the collaborative thing, and I know that's not exactly what you do, but the collaborative thing is relatively new, right, in the lifespan of a divorce, isn't it?
Collaborative is new. Mediation is not. But right. And settlement is as old as dispute.
Oh my God, I hope so. Dispute. Yes, I bet it is. Okay, so talk to us about the litigation process. And really what I'm hoping to drive, the road I'm trying to drive people down is, and this was surprising to me, that there are ways you can choose to dissolve your marriage, or anything for that matter, but mostly we're talking about marriage. And that surprised me when I first found that out, you know, three or four major ones. And you guys kind of represent, as you mentioned, same toolbox, different tools, but two different ways of getting to the same end result. And there's pros and cons of both. And you have to have a certain mindset when going into one versus the other. So talk to us a little bit about the litigation process.
All right. Well, I'll start with the number one advantage to litigation.
Okay.
The number one advantage to litigation, assuming it concludes.
Assuming it concludes. Okay.
Assuming it concludes, because an awful lot of circumstances are an attorney takes some money, keeps the case till the retainer runs out, and then leaves the clients in limbo, and they ultimately never navigate the maze that is our court system, and they never find a way to get divorced. And I've had clients.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've had clients where they never got their divorce, and 20 years went by because they just couldn't figure out the system, and they ran out of money. And then finally, they got enough together to try again. But assuming it concludes, the advantage of it, of course, is that you have a result. Even if the parties disagree, someone makes a decision. The extreme case in favor of litigation, I have two cases like this that I recall. Two cases where parties were in absolute agreement, reached a negotiated settlement, signed off on everything, and it was rejected by the court for some crazy technicality and ultimately forced the parties into litigation. I'm sorry, that's actually one instance. The other instance was parties that were actually together in the home. It was a parentage case. The way this case came about was mom was mad at dad for some reason, didn't put him on the birth certificate. So later on, everything was fine. They never moved apart. It wasn't that they weren't reconciled, just one act of anger. I hesitated there because these were Spanish-speaking clients, so I'm remembering it in Spanish. But so I have to translate. So anyway, the end result of that was that he had to file for parentage in order to get the birth certificates changed. She agreed with everything all along the way. There weren't any problems. We weren't going to have any child support orders because they lived together. And the clerks literally could not process the situation, and eventually it had to go to trial. And there I was representing my client with the opposing party sitting at the same table with the rest of us and an empty table on the other side. The judge thought that was particularly funny, gave us our dissolution, and it was over. That's an example of litigation. And there's your extreme example of the advantage of litigation. You get a result. The downside, of course, is that it could generate animosity. You can get a case where they agree on everything, and maybe after 6 months of frustration with the system, the agreement falls apart. And so that's the disadvantage.
We're talking with Ethan Marcus, president of Marcus Family Law Center. His website, barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. Talk to me about the situation where both parties were agreeable.
Yeah.
They had something in writing. took it to a judge, and the judge rejected it. Why?
Yeah, the judge did not reject it. That's once you actually take it to a judge, that is litigation. I mean, you've made some sort of paperwork that puts you in front of a judge so the judge can make a decision. So in San Diego, this isn't true in every county, but in San Diego, there are layers of filtration before it even gets to a judge, and it has to go through a bunch of clerks. The clerks have administrative authority. They do not have judicial authority. So they reject paperwork based on technicalities. So the problem might be, and by the way, they may not even be accurate technicalities because they're not lawyers, and they're often incorrect. So a perfectly legitimate document may go in. The judge never sees it. And they'll just kick it back because it offends them in some way. For example, I had one that said, you never check the box that explains why you did not provide your income and expense declaration and property declaration. And my response to that was, it's because we provided it, so we didn't think we needed to check the box explaining why we didn't.
And that makes sense.
and they came back and said, well, we're used to the box being checked, so we need you to check that box, and we need you to give a reason. So we did, because we don't fight them. But eventually, sometimes these things actually can end up getting before a judge. And then the worst case scenario in this county is where the settlement was taken before a judge. The judge says, I've heard your settlement. It sounds reasonable to me. Put it into a judgment and I'll sign it. And then everyone leaves. It's prepared. And then the clerks reject one after the other until eventually you have to file some sort of motion and get it before the court. If you're very lucky, the agreement still stands. But some agreements, as Rich will tell you, are fragile. And if their agreement for the first 2, 3, 4 months, if it hasn't been made official, by the 5th month, they're starting to have second thoughts. Maybe some incidents have arisen that made them think that this isn't going to work after all. There hasn't been an opportunity to implement. So I'm kind of deviating from advantages and disadvantages of litigation in a pure form, because I'm talking about what the realities are. The realities are, ultimately, you're trying to solve a problem. So there are times when you need to go to court and get it solved, even when there's an agreement. There are times you have to go to court and get it solved because there's no agreement. Mm-hmm. There's times when you have to go to court and solve those things on which there be no agreement, and then kick it back to some expert like Rich to help them go through those things where they can reach an agreement. And if you're not prepared to be able to use every single tool in your toolbox at the right time, sometimes you need your hammer because you're facing a nail, and sometimes you need a screwdriver because you're facing a screw. The divorce is not an instantaneous process. And so there are times when we're going to be in litigation or in mediation or collaboration or whatever, and you just have to be alert for the opportunities, and you have to know the other side, you have to know your own client, and you have to gather when the fruit is ripe.
Talking with Ethan Marcus here, his website, barefootlawyer.com. That's his website, barefootlawyer.com. Now, you hit on something that I know you mentioned before, but there's often time where people would use both the hammer and the screwdriver to solve their problem, right? I mean, mediation and litigation are potential solutions that both could be implemented. As you mentioned, perhaps all the boxes can't be agreed upon. You choose one method to get the remaining ones. How often do you find that to be the case?
If I'm good at what I do, and I do 80% of the issues that need to be resolved, and they're 20% open, and someone like Ethan who says, okay, the 80% looks fine, I'll deal with the 20%, that's a home run. And he'll deal with those, and then the what we call the marital settlement agreement will be submitted to the court. That's great. So that's using both, rather than somebody blowing up the entire thing and saying, we're going to start this from day one. There are certain attorneys in town who will start from day one because they can ask for a larger retainer that they can blow through and leave the people high and dry. We'll leave that name out of this discussion. One of the things Ethan said about the court rejecting papers, I had one recently where the papers were not two-hole punched, and the clerk rejected it because the two holes were not punched in the proper location.
Well, that changes everything.
Yeah.
Yes. And it did run into a thing that it could have blown up unless the judgment were issued because somebody was planning to get married very quickly.
So they don't stock a two-hole punch at the clerk's desk?
They do. And sometimes if they You know, human relationships matter. So if the clerk likes you, they'll hole punch it for you.
Wow.
And if they, for some reason, have decided that they would rather not.
Yeah, it sounds like she didn't like you.
No, no, it wasn't me. It was the fact that the number of clerks has been diminished significantly, okay. And it's a matter of they're feeling overwhelmed.
Okay. Got it.
Now, Rich has hit on an interesting point, which is the 80% and the 20%, and whatever the percentages are, there is one thing that I can say that's really good about the California system, and that is that they've adopted a thing called divisible divorce. So as many issues as there are in a divorce, every one of them can be resolved separately. And the advantage of that is that parties often agree on much more than they realize. And if they can just get those things that they agree on out of the way without linking them to the sources of their frustration, they are so much further along the road in getting things resolved for themselves.
Talking with Ethan Marcus, president of the Marcus Family Law Center, his website, barefootlawyer.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the outcome differences of mediation versus litigation ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour. With us today, Rich Gordon, a Fairway Mediation Center, Ethan Marcus, president of Marcus Family Law Center. So we talked about the differences in the outcome between mediation and litigation, and I continue to refer to your process, Ethan, as litigation, but I want to point out that it doesn't always go that way, right? What percentage of the time does it actually end up in litigation?
Well, that's a hard statistic to answer because most of the cases that I have are not 100% litigation anyway. But in terms of cases that have some fraction of them be litigated,
sure,
probably 75% or higher if attorneys be involved. I don't have statistics for people who represent themselves.
Well, sure. I'm just talking about years, of course. Of course. Got it. So difference in outcomes of mediation has a lot to do with the expense associated with it, or certainly could. Rich, what are we talking about in terms of fees and how that method plays out with respect to mediation?
In mediation, the couple splits my fee so that whatever my fee may be, it's 50% from each side. And if there's community money, it comes out of the community fund. So each of their oxes will be gored accordingly so that and I make sure that they're responsible, because if you get something for nothing, it has no value to you. But if you're paying $5 an hour, $500 an hour, Ethan's case, $5,000 an hour, then
$6,000.
It means something to you. So it is significantly less than litigation, but it is something that you are going to pay.
Got it. And so what should someone expect to pay to have a case mediated?
Okay. Well, a fair average is between $5,000 and $10,000. Fair average. There are some that are certainly more.
Of course.
We have in California something called a summary dissolution of marriage. That's less than 5 years of marriage, no children, no real estate. Those can be quite, quite simple. You know, that's just knives, forks and spoons kind of negotiation. That can be very little. The court fee of $435, one-time fee. So it could be as low as $1,500 up to $10,000. But I've had some into the high $50,000.
Kind of depends on how much the two want to argue, right?
Exactly.
And so on average, 5 to 10 is what you're saying.
Yes.
Got it. And in converse, isn't the I guess, litigation method?
I have to hesitate. Well, the litigation method spans the people that won't go to Rich because they walked in with an agreement. That could be as low as $350 to the people that will litigate to the last ounce in their kids' inheritance. And I've had cases there go over $300,000. And I've heard of cases that went even further than that.
Oh, I'm sure. But what are we talking on average? I mean, those are the outliers, I would imagine.
Our averages, well, now I'm going to limit it to San Diego County, because our averages
Sounds
in
good.
Imperial County aren't much different from Rich's average. But those are people that have a lot less to fight about. And ultimately, once they get custody figured out, they're usually within that range. But for those people that actually have something to talk about, those people are going to be anywhere from 30 to 70,000.
Wow. So 50 in the middle.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a big number.
I had a case referred to me by a judge from the bench who the people had spent $650,000 on lawyering, and she just found it ridiculous because she wanted his boyhood stamp collection, really, his baseball card collection, all without the four corners of the community property. And the judge said, enough, I'm sick of seeing you people. And they came to see me, and it was done for $12,000. Because enough already. The judge just said, enough.
Sick of seeing you guys in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
How could his stamp collection and baseball card collection be worth $650 to begin with?
Why was it even raised? That's a different issue.
Yeah, I guess so. She probably just wanted to hurt him. Was that the idea?
Bingo.
Got it. Got it. Okay, good enough. So let's talk about, obviously, the amount of money left in one's bank account is one of the differences between, or potential differences, in terms of outcome with mediation and litigation. What are other differences, I suspect, more associated with the custody agreement, spousal agreement? What are some of the differences associated with that?
There shouldn't be any. I mean, at the end of the day, if there's litigation or mediation, they should be pretty close to within the four corners of what the law allows. I think the end result may be whether the spouses can continue to have some kind of relationship after the litigation is done if they are parents, because there'll be so much more hostility if they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars as opposed to having some extra money for a summer vacation.
Got it. And you find that also to be, you know, the end result, the goal is to have the end result the same, right?
Yeah, that's right. And what often causes the numbers that I was talking about, and I'm not really talking about the hybrid cases. We're talking about where we've just fought from day one and we continue until the court puts an end to it with a decision. What causes that to happen is one person thinks that they can do better than what the law allows or what seems like a fair deal. They're looking for an advantage. They've hired an attorney who tells them, hey, there's the baseline, half the money and sharing the children, but I can do better than that. That's what I have to sell you. And then I'll be hired to counter that and bring things back to reality. And we end up fighting over those things. We get exactly what they might have gotten had they just agreed in the first place, except they're going to be that much money poorer because right. They gambled on trying to get a better deal.
Okay, let's talk about this unique concept here that you brought up, Rich, same-sex couples. And go ahead, tell me how your process for mediation is unique with their secrets that they may want to keep.
California now has same-sex marriages. Before that, we had domestic partners that gave people of the same sex the ability to have a relationship and share things and have rights to spousal support and now retirement and other assets. Some people do get married, but they're not, quote, out to the general public. If you have good gaydar, you'll know they're out. But if not, they come to us so that they do not have to step foot into the courthouse and no one knows their secrets and lies.
So keeping your skeletons in the closet, mediation.
So to speak.
So to speak, yeah. Mediation might be a better way to go about it.
Sure. And I've been told several times that is why they've chosen to go that way.
Whereas the litigation, you know, is very public, right? I mean, anybody can walk into that courthouse and sit down and watch.
Well, that's right. And there are many secrets you can keep, but the gender of the couple is a difficult one to keep.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Sure.
I remember I sat down and watched, and I didn't have any special authority to be there. I was just there. So, I mean, if you wanted to, seems like you could do so. Mm-hmm. Not an overly happy place to hang out all day, but could be done.
Well, and there are people who do it. That's their hobby.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. They delve into other people's misery, and they feel good about it.
Right. Playing on the misery of others, it's a great hobby.
Wow. Well, that's too bad.
That's why we say we help people break up nicely.
Well, that's a good way to say it. Well, just to wrap up here, Rich Gordon, A Fair Way Mediation Center, afairway.com, afairway.com is his website, as well as Ethan Marcus, President Marcus Family Law Center. His website, barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. It was great.
Okay. We'll talk to you all next week. Thank you.